Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday morning. It's October 22nd. Currently 33 degrees here in Old Town Park City, 34 degrees in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Wednesday, KPCW listeners. We're looking at increasing clouds as we go throughout the day. We'll call it partly cloudy skies out there. Park City will see high temperatures climbing into the mid-60s. We'll be in the upper 60s for highs in the Heber Valley with those partly cloudy skies. As we go into your Wednesday night, look for mostly cloudy skies. We could see an isolated shower or two graze by the Wasatch Back. It's not going to amount to much, but there's a chance of a few isolated showers, primarily south of the Wasatch Back. But we'll keep an eye on that. Overnight lows will be above freezing in the upper 30s, near 40 degrees. And then as we go throughout the day on Thursday, we should see decreasing clouds with temperatures climbing into the mid to upper 50s in Park City and highs in the low 60s for the Heber Valley. Once we get past Thursday, our Friday will wrap up on a very nice note. Lots of sunshine expected, a chilly start with morning low temperatures right around the freezing mark. We'll see those highs rebounding back into the upper 50s here as you get into the Park City area for your Friday afternoon. We'll see those high temperatures in the mid-60s in the Heber Valley. Once we make our way into the weekend starts off very nice with partly cloudy skies. We'll see temperatures starting off in the 30s for both Park City and the Heber Valley, but we'll see those high temperatures in the low 60s for us in Park City for your Saturday afternoon. We'll see those highs climbing into the mid-60s in the Heber Valley. Now, we've got big changes as a more significant storm system moves into northern Utah Saturday night into Sunday, and that is going to bring with an increase in clouds Saturday night, and we'll see the chance of rain increasing throughout the day on your Sunday. In fact, we'll have rainy and breezy conditions for your Sunday. Temperatures will actually hold only in the 40s in Park City with highs only in the mid-50s in the Heber Valley. Now, by late Sunday evening into Sunday night, we're going to start to see cold air flowing in behind that cold front. So those rain showers will change over to snow showers. Could see some accumulating snow across areas like Park City and even in the Heber Valley as we get into your Sunday overnight into early Monday morning. We'll start off Monday with snow showers in the Park City area. Temperatures in the upper 20s. We'll be in the upper 20s with drying conditions in the Heber Valley, and we're going to stay on the chilly side for the beginning of next week. That's a good your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Stay tuned. Coming up, I'll be checking in with developers Gary and Ryan Crandall. We'll be talking about the opening of Studio Crossing at Quinns Junction. Acting City Manager Jody Emery and Transportation Director Tim Sanderson preview this week's City Council meeting. And Summit County Active Transportation Planner Senta Beyer is joined by Deputy Director Eva D. Laurentis discussing the Active Transportation Plan and Vanpool Project. Then stay tuned for The Mountain Life. Today's guest includes psychologist Dr. Ingrid Clayton, who unpacks the overlooked trauma response that keeps us stuck in toxic patterns. Learn how to recognize it and how to break free from it. Then author Michael O'Malley shares insider stories, local wisdom, and a few spicy truths about living at elevation in his new book, Attitude at Altitude, The People's Guide to Park City and Summit County. All of that coming up on The Mountain Life, heard, of course, every Wednesday between 9 and 10. Taking a look at some local news, as Heber City and Wasatch County leaders work on an open space agreement for the Jordan L. Ridge development, they are taking suggestions from conservation experts into account. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more.
Wasatch County Council members say they're not ready to sign an agreement for an unconventional conservation easement for 2,000 acres of Jordan L. Ridge, the development with thousands of homes in northern Heber. As drafted, the easement would be jointly held by the city and county, and the county would have authority to enforce the agreement. Some open space advocates have said the plan is weaker than a conservation easement created through a land trust, like Summit Land Conservancy or Utah Open Lands. But Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh says the jointly held easement might be the most logical path forward and the quickest.
Either we approve the conservation easement before us and get some protections in place, or we wait multiple years, potentially even decades, before this development is done, and then hope that we can get a third-party conservation easement.
Graybaugh says, unlike a typical easement, this one would not offer any tax benefits to the Jordan L. Ridge developer. It bypasses certain federal requirements, too. Graybaugh said that makes sense for this land because the details of the development are still being worked out.
Part of the challenge in this area in particular is that there is ongoing development going to and through this area. So what Wasatch County was able to do is negotiate with Heber City and the developer to ensure that the bounds of what could change in there are very limited to very specific authorized uses.
That includes utility lines and a debris basin to protect homes below the open space. The developer has said the terrain is too steep for homes. Graybaugh says he sees benefit to county residents because the open space will include public access. He says county leaders think this agreement offers more protection, with the county adding another layer of oversight.
Heber City could have proceeded with this agreement without us.
However, others, like Heber City Mayor Heidi Franco and Summit Land Conservancy CEO Cheryl Fox, say it would be better for a third party to safeguard the open space. The agreement is on the county council agenda for November 19th. Before then, county leaders will propose revisions. Those could include things like stronger documentation of the land's original condition and clearer steps for enforcing the open space agreement. Graybaugh says those changes will offer a good hybrid model, faster implementation than a conventional easement, but stricter guidelines based on land advocates' feedback. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Well, in 2022, the Park City Council approved a mixed-use development. It's now under construction next to the Utah Film Studios at Quinn's Junction. In the studio with an update, I have the CEO of Crandall Capital, the developer of the property, Gary Crandall. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Great, Leslie. We're glad to be with you.
Yeah, thanks. I'm going to get you just a little bit closer to that mic. There you go. Thanks. So Crandall Capital is a family-owned real estate firm. In addition to the film studio, Studio Crossing, what else have you developed here in the Park City area?
Actually, some time ago, we bought New Park, which is out in New Park or Redstone area. It is where Best Buy used to be. They've since have parted ways with us, but we own all that out there. And we built out there. We built a 38 affordable housing for the county. And so, we really enjoy being here in Park City, and we look to be here for quite a long time.
Yeah. What's going into Best Buy? Can you tell us?
We're talking to several different people. We haven't got any signed leases yet, but we'll be having some news shortly on that.
Okay. My understanding is it may be the building may be downsized, or at least walls go up. So it's not one large retailer, maybe several smaller ones?
Yes. What we're looking to do is actually divide it from east to west with a hallway in the middle. And then eventually we'll have storefronts on both sides. So it'll be on the Redstone side and also on the New Park side. So actually, I think it's going to work out to be much better for the area.
Okay. A lot of us were holding out hope for Trader Joe's, but that's not happening, huh?
We keep hoping, but they don't like our parking downstairs.
Interesting. Okay. Well, let's talk about what's being built at Studio Crossing. It had a slow start, but it's really kind of taken off. What are we seeing out there?
Well, right now we've just about completed. In fact, we're having a ribbon cutting on Friday, November the 7th. We're not exactly sure what time, but the city is going to give us hopefully our certificate of occupancy, at least on our first mixed-use building and probably on the retail buildings. So we've built two mixed-use buildings, which are on the first level of each of those two buildings is 15,000 square foot footprint of commercial, and then there's two floors of affordable housing or apartments on top. So in each building will be 51 apartments.
Okay, that's all of the affordable housing? So 102?
Well, there will actually be a total of 208. We have those two buildings now that are just about finished, and then we'll in the first of the spring we'll start another all affordable building, which will be just four stories of all buildings. So there'll be 104 in that one and 52 in each of these others.
Okay. And then what about, there is some market rate housing out there? Or?
Yes, we're also, we've just broken ground. They're putting in the foundations now for 50 townhomes, which will be 3 and 4 bedrooms. And those will be for sale for market rate, somewhere around 100 and $1.4 million to $1.6 million, something in that area.
Okay. Tell me a little bit more about the retail, if you can. Do you have signed contracts there?
We've been talking to several restaurants, so we're anticipating having a very nice restaurant there or two, and small markets for, you know, short food, get small items there. It's not big enough to have like a Trader Joe's or somebody like that. And then we're talking about some dental people or kind of like a wine tasting bar area type thing, nail salons, so a whole variety of things, some kind of a possible where you get shots to perk you up. Can't remember all the names of it, but yeah, we have quite a variety of different people looking at it. And so we'll be getting that. And also then there's possibly a medical group that's going to look at taking a big chunk of it.
Okay, but I think you just told me 15,000. Is the commercial bigger than that?
Well, that's 15,000 each of the four buildings. So it's a total of 60,000 square foot.
Got it. All right. And again, so it sounds like four phases?
Yeah, probably about four phases, yes. Because we've got what we've started already. Now we've got the townhome started. Then we'll have another apartment building coming up. And then after all that, then we have a condominium building that'll be really great, I think, for seniors, because it'll be all living on one level, so it won't be up and down. Although the townhomes work too for some seniors, because we're in the four bedroom, we have a bedroom on the first level. With the other bedrooms on the up top. So, yeah, we did have discussions with the Senior Alliance Group when we first started, and hopefully we can meet some of their needs.
So is the senior housing at market rate then?
Yes, that would be at market rate.
All right. Let's see. And in terms of the affordable units, how affordable will they be?
Well, actually, they're pretty good. The prices... we actually worked a really unusual situation with the city, and we're very proud of it. The prices go from a studio as low as $1,650, and one thing that we're really proud about is our one bedrooms are really one and a half bedrooms, and they are going for like $1,850 to start, or the minimum is on those. And then the two bedroom is, let me just check here, about $2,600, and then the three bedrooms about $3,300. So it's quite a nice range. But usually when you're talking about affordable housing, somebody, like if they're in the 60 or 70% category, once they hit that level, then they have to move out. And it really disincentivizes people to try to get ahead, to maybe get a second job or work extra time or whatever. With us in the city, which has been wonderful, they've allowed us to go to 120% of the average minimum income. So people will be able to be making, you know, grow all the way from 60% to 120%. So it's going to be a wide range of people that's going to be able to live there. But the best thing about it is, for the community, is that our rates stay the same. So if somebody went up to, say, 120%, they'd still be living there at, say, 60% or 70 or 80%, whatever the market was. So we don't change our rate. So that should help to drive down some of the other rentals in town, we hope and anticipate.
Yeah, and how do people, if they're interested in renting something, I mean, what do they need to do?
They can contact us through studiocrossings.com.
All right. Because of all the affordable housing that was getting built, you had asked the city for some fee waivers. Were those ultimately granted to you?
Yes, they were, and that was nothing unusual. I think just about every project in in the town has been waived those fees if it's for affordable housing.
All right. And when we last talked, we had heard briefly at a school board meeting about working out an arrangement for school district employees. Did that ever come to fruition?
We've been in contact with the school district and some of the others, like the hospital and different people in town, the police department and stuff. So far, none of them have stepped up yet to master lease any of them. So I know that we've got several of their, you know, several teachers or several nurses or different people that are applying individually, but none of the master leases has come to fruition yet.
All right. Now, are all of the affordable units for rent only?
Yes, that's correct. They're only for rent.
All right. And is your Crandall Capital, are you the property manager, or do you kind of parse that out to a professional?
We will be hiring a property manager to take care of it.
Okay. And what kind of interest are you seeing from folks?
I think on the first unit, we have over 200 applicants or 200 people that have shown interest in it through our webpage.
Okay.
So there's quite a lot of activity.
All right. And the leases will be for a minimum of a year. Is that the plan?
Yes. We'd like to get a minimum of a year.
Okay. Let's see. Anything else you want to tell us about Studio Crossing?
Well, there's a lot going on out there. I don't know if a lot of people in town are aware of it, but as you know, we own the movie studio, as you mentioned earlier. And we actually had Yellowstone there for the first 3 years of their project there. And then they went up to Montana. We've also done a series called 1923 with Yellowstone. We had some of their filming done at our studio. There was a real famous part, I think it was in the first airing where this leopard kills some people. And that was actually filmed at our place, and we had this leopard there all the time, and the people would take it out to walk, and that stirred a lot of activity when people would see this leopard walking down the street. But anyway, right now we have Yellowstone back with a new series called Why Marshals, and it's got Luke in it, and it's doing extremely well, and they plan on being there several years.
Okay, because I was going to ask you about that in terms of, production studios are getting used.
Yeah, they're very busy. In fact, with the two, it is a mess out there as far as traffic goes. We have, just the normal staff for the movie studio, they have 350 people there when they're filming. And then they may bring in another 200 or 300 people, part-time for just stand-ins. And so we may have just in that over 500 people just at the studio for that. Plus all the activity. We've got Steed Construction is doing our building at the Crossings for the affordable housing and stuff. And they have like 250 people there normally every day. So it's really been, actually once they got started, they've been flying.
Yeah. So once all of this that we've talked about is developed, is that the extent of it, or do you still have more development rights out there?
No, that's all that we have. We do have a little bit more space, but the city has said that that's enough. Hopefully they might change their mind, but at the present time, that's all we have left to build out there.
Okay. And after this, what do you get your eyes on?
Well, we've got some ideas that we've would like to approach the city with, and hopefully you'll be hearing more about that down the road after the election.
Okay. Gary, anything else you want to mention?
Well, we just love Park City and Summit County and think that it's the best place in the world to be living.
All right. Well, appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie.
And again,
nice to be with you.
People can get that more information about the rentals, studiocrossings.com.
Correct. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, the Park City Council meets on Thursday in work session starting at 4:30. In the studio with a preview of the meeting, I have Acting City Manager Jody Emery along with Transportation Director Tim Sanderson. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
Jody, how's the search for the new city manager going? Is the city still accepting applications on this?
I don't believe that the application period has actually opened yet, but I know that discussions are happening with the recruiter.
Oh, okay. So we still haven't finalized that yet.
No. And they anticipate having that open soon, but then it'll be open for some time after the election.
All right. Because I know that we're not making a decision on who that new city manager will be until the new council is seated.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's
all right. All right. And you're still planning to submit an application for this?
I am.
Okay. Let me see. Two community opportunities were held, I think, on Monday to learn more about the Bonanza 5-acre site. Can you talk to us about what you heard from those meetings that you haven't heard before?
I don't think we've heard anything that we haven't heard before on Monday. I wasn't able to talk to everybody. I was in the evening session. There were two sessions on Monday. I know that Brinshore was collecting the feedback, and they plan to give a report tomorrow on what they heard, as well as allowing that to inform the ongoing discussions about what's being planned.
Okay, so where do things stand on this 5 acres? I mean, is the city's development department, Renshaw, ready to put together a plan, a master plan?
I think we're getting closer with each work session. This will be the fifth work session on Thursday with that partner. And they're still trying to refine the decisions on housing mix, density, parking, and gathering spaces. And so we're really just hoping that we're just getting even closer. We don't anticipate a decision, though.
Yeah. What's the timeline, though? I mean, does this kind of, once you have a plan, does it move to the Planning Commission, or does it go directly to City Council?
Yes. No. It goes to the Planning Commission after that. Okay. So we're trying to get to the point where Renshaw can have that development plan that would be an initial conversation with the Planning Commission.
All right. File the application.
Correct.
Yeah. And do we know what we're looking for in terms of the zoning there? I mean, are we going for the mixed-use affordable housing plan?
We're looking for a mixed-income neighborhood with art, housing, and community at its core. And some of the things still up for discussion are, what does the parking look like? And we have Tim here if you want to talk about what that parking might potentially look at, like.
And then what else is not decided?
I think everything I just mentioned, they're okay. Still thinking about what is that density. In the housing mix, what's the density, what does the parking look like, what do the gathering spaces look like.
Okay, well, Tim, let's talk a little bit about the parking district discussions. Are we moving forward with one level or two?
The jury's still out on that right now. Council really provided us with a really intriguing concept of if we're in the process of constructing parking, would it make sense to construct additional parking for the rest of the area at the same time? Not necessarily to increase parking or to increase traffic to the area, but when the other properties around the Bonanza lot start to redevelop, that it would affect their parking demands, and that wouldn't necessarily have to be a consideration in their developments. It's an intriguing concept, something that we haven't necessarily approached. It's a little similar to what we do with China Bridge, but not a number of differences as well. So really what council has done is tasked us with what would it take to make this a reality? But what our marching orders is, we also don't want it to slow down the rest of the progress on Bonanza. So it's an additional level of parking. It's really not going to change or affect the footprint on anything. So we feel strongly that we can work simultaneously, consecutively.
Yeah, so in terms of the one level or two level, how many spots are we talking about?
I think our latest one is about 250 to 260 spots per level, so that would be an additional. There's a little bit of a change just because of ramps and stuff like that, but.
Yeah, and that would be the max then, or is the discussion we might want to go bigger than that?
You know, that wasn't the discussion that we had, but I think part of what we would need to do in order to do this is to find out what the right parking mix is for that future development. You know, and the example I always give, and this is not that we have any discussions or anything, but the strip mall that has a lot of surface parking, and Sammy's Bistro and Stack Sandwiches and those places in it, should that lot redevelop again, then the parking could be used across the street rather than another surface parking lot.
Yeah, so if the city builds it, then what, do you sell them parking spaces? Is that how it would work?
There's a number of different ways in order to do it. I don't think we would straight out sell them. We would probably continue to operate the lot, but have some type of a fee in lieu or a lease payment, or there's a number of different mechanisms for how to do it.
All right, and are we still talking about, this is just be for single vehicles? We're not talking about putting some kind of transit center that was originally envisioned, I mean, when we first had plans for this area.
No, that being said, we are, our plan is to really service it heavily with transit, but the plan is more to service it on street. And the reason for that is it really speeds up service. Whereas if you have to come onto a lot, you have to make a lot of turns, you've got some traffic in there and a number of different things like that. Whereas if we're just on street, we can just stop and go and keep our customers moving.
Yeah. Are you thinking pullouts? Because I've been told that actually pullouts are terrible for bus drivers because they can never get back in.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They work... Everybody thinks that they work great, and they do in certain circumstances when there's a high speed limit and we just get the bus out of the way. But generally it just makes it tougher for it to get back in. What the concept we're at now is actually having a dedicated transit lane against the side of the property. So it would be in lane, but it would be in transit lane. So again, a lot of those details are still being worked out for how it'll actually look.
Okay. Let's see. Let's move on. Your Transportation Department, Tim's been awarded more than $10.5 million in new funding, and you've also submitted 13 new grant applications. 10 of those are for federal funds, 3 of them to Summit County. So with the federal government shut down and cuts being made left and right, I mean, how solid is federal funding?
The good news is despite the shutdown, the Department of Transportation isn't affected by it, so everything keeps on chugging along at the same pace that it always chugs along with at the federal government. So not necessarily really affected with that, but really the importance of this document is a lot of times with our federal grants is we front the money in Park City. So we pay it forward and then we have to reimburse it. And sometimes that process, or at least when I started here a couple of years ago, we had some grants that were 8 years old, 9 years old. So we've really did a strong push in order to close those up as much as possible and get those dollars back into the coffers of Park City.
Okay, so is that the $10 million that we're talking about, $10.5 million, the older grants? Or?
Yeah, that's the older grants, and then we're also getting new grants at the same time. So it's this continual cycle of us we're very lucky to get the grants, and then the trick is spending them.
So what are the plans then for that $10.5 million?
We've got a number of different projects that we're going to be putting it towards. Continuation, probably one of the biggest ones, is a continuation of the bus stop project that we've been working on. We received, I think it was around $7 million a couple of years ago in order to rehab and redo not just our bus stops, but the path of travel to the bus stops, because that is... that's almost more important than having, you can have the nicest bus stop in the world, but if you have no sidewalks or pathways to get to it, it's futile. So that's a big part of it.
So will we eventually see all of the bus stops covered?
I don't think we'll ever get that far, but we have a priority system based upon ridership at the stop for what amenities we put up. So some will get a bench, some get a shelter, some get some digital signage. And we do that because, again, we don't have it at every stop. So we prioritize the busier stops get more amenities.
All right, and then what about the new grant applications? What are you seeking money to do?
One of the biggest ones that we're taking a look at is Recreate 248. That is our North Star nowadays, is really just working towards that, and we know it's going to be an expensive project and really just shoring up and trying to bank as much as possible. That's really probably one of the largest ones. We're also constantly looking at money to replace buses, because again, at the end of the day, if we don't have buses, then we don't have a very good transit system. So,
right. Any funding plan to fix the broken EV chargers? You've got a bunch of broken ones at the library and at City Park.
How did I know this one was coming? You know what? We've heard that comment a lot. Historically, that hasn't been part of the transportation department, but we recently took it over a couple of months ago. One of the challenges is old, although it doesn't seem like it's old technology, the technology for charging has changed so much. So a lot of it is sourcing those things or deciding it in order to change the type of charger that's going in there. We just want to make sure that we do it right rather than throwing money into old technology.
Okay, so rather than fix them, you're kind of waiting to maybe redo them?
I think that's, we're weighing that out. I don't think we've made that complete analysis yet. We're fixing them where we can, but I think at some point we're going to have to take a look at replacing them and coming up with a different system. Nowadays, again, we've got all the new Rivian chargers that are coming online, so there are other chargers throughout the city as well, too, so...
All right, back to the Recreate 248. We've got buses on the sides of the roads moving on. I mean, is that final? I mean, did you go through everything that 224 has gone through with the environmental, the EIS study and all of that?
Not even close. We're right at the beginning right now. So what we've started off with was really just the concept of the two areas that we wanted to connect, which was... which again, the Richardson Flat area with Old Town. And we took a look at a number of different modes. So that was everything from a monorail to light rail, using the rail trail and all of those kinds of things. We had a very spirited discussion in town about what alignment to use. Council gave us direction to move forward on a 248 alignment. Right now we're taking a look at mode. So the two modes that we're looking at are transit or light rail. And we expect to come back early in the new year to council with our recommendation on what that's going to look like, whether we recommend transit or rail, and then council will give us that direction moving forward. The next step after that is to start that environmental design.
Okay. Because are we talking about widening the road at all?
You know, there's probably going to be some points that... Again, we don't have any design yet, so a lot of this is just based upon my experience. But what our marching orders are is to keep that footprint as minimal as possible, but really just in order to facilitate it, it's going to, we may have to make some minor impacts in some places. I don't know what those are going to look like, and a lot of that will be in discussion with UDOT as well, because at the end of the day, 248 is UDOT right away, and you know, they have to agree with what we want to do with it. And then I think the second thing is we do have a charter with UDOT on this project, and part of the charter says that we won't reduce the capacity of 248. So that is really the thing that we bang up against the most when trying to add transit is not impacting vehicle traffic.
All right, and then in terms of light rail, we're talking that would go above 248, is that the idea? And it go from where to where? I mean, it just seems...
Yeah, again, we haven't done design on it. There's a number of different options. I think that initially what's envisioned would be side running, so that it would basically run down the shoulders as well, similar to transit. But again, there could be, I mean, it could be underground. I don't think overground would, or above ground, I don't think the community would be into that.
Okay. Let's see. Work session, Jody, comprised of the Kimball Arts Festival debrief as well as the Park City Senior Citizens Annual Report. Let's start with the Arts Festival.
Sure.
How did it go?
It went great. So the festival's reporting 26,378 people attended over the 3 days, and we were pretty excited about the transit numbers. We had over 6,400 transit riders, really strong parking management, and they are estimating $26 million in economic impact, which generated $535,000 in city tax revenue.
Yeah, the attendance down about 10% from a year ago. Art sales, however, were up more than 6%. So I guess, what does that tell you? I mean, people have more room to shop?
That, or art's more expensive? I don't know. It was a great festival. I attended both days, or 2 days, and it felt like it was really hopping.
Yeah. Friday night, the busiest ever. In fact, the busiest of all 3 days. So will the city continue subsidizing that free Friday locals night?
I haven't heard, but I know that we're planning already for next year's event, so I'm sure that'll be one of the things discussed.
Okay. Moving on, I guess, to the senior center, the silver tsunami, according to the report, is here, as evidenced by the increasing membership numbers at
Absolutely.
The senior center. They've basically proven the need for a bigger center. So what's the status with that?
Well, the seniors are going to be making the presentation to the council on Thursday, advocating for a new 15,000 square foot senior center. And they're hoping with that senior center that they can expand hours, they can expand meal service, and as you said, the membership has grown tremendously. They've gone from 70 members to more than 650 in just 5 years, which is huge growth. And so they're just looking to add to the benefits and enhance their space.
Yeah. Can the city meet the seniors' request, though, for increase in operations, activities, programs?
I think that's yet to be determined. We're at the beginning of those conversations.
And again, is that a city function, or is this something that the county needs to be part of?
That's a good question. It's a three-way partnership. So it's a three-way partnership between the city, the county, and the senior citizens nonprofit. We are hoping that the county will continue to be involved. They are primarily offering the meal service right now, and a number of other of the amenities within the building. And so the seniors will also be talking to the county about their potential contribution.
Okay. KPCW got a Silly Market debrief from Silly Market Executive Director Kent McChesney that the market was solid this year, though numbers down slightly. What's the city's assessment?
Well, the city's assessment is that the Silly Market did really well. They met all of the compliance with the vendor caps. And again, we had attendance of 179,000, just shy of 180,000 over the 11 Sundays. But we're pleased with the 84% waste diversion numbers that they're reporting. We had zero noise complaints. They complied, as I said, with the vendor caps. Again, transit was hopping, 41,000 transit rides and 15,500 parking transactions recorded. So we're seeing good numbers with the market. And Thursday, we're just going to be looking at and approving their 2026 season dates.
Okay. And unlike the Kimball Art Festival report, I didn't see any economic numbers with a Silly Market. Any sort of guess in terms of what kind of tax benefit that
provides? No, I asked that same question. I don't know that we have those numbers, but we certainly would like to see them. But I'm sure with that kind of attendance that it had an impact, a good impact.
All right. Anything else from either of you?
No, I don't think we have anything.
The only thing I would add is a lot of locals listening here to try taking transit for one of your trips a week, and we can help fight traffic.
Okay. Tim Sanderson, Jody Emery, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
Summit County is updating its active transportation plan and working on plans to form a van pool in the studio with details about the plan and a community survey that's underway. I have the county's active transportation planner sent to Buyer, along with Deputy Director Eva DeLaurentis. Good morning, and thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Leslie.
Good morning.
So, Senta, the plan, I think you had one earlier than this, completed back, in 2019?
It was 2019, and really the focus with this plan is to build from a lot of the existing information. Obviously, been able to complete some great projects, but I think this time around we're wanting to provide a little bit more focus in Eastern Summit County. We're also addressing a component for our Summit Bike Share program, as far as a comprehensive master plan, so to speak, so we can, I guess, better get an idea of where we may be deficient in stations, as well as infrastructure to support the system. But again, I think there's a lot of opportunity in Eastern Summit County. We're really lucky over here in the basin to have great pathways and infrastructure, largely due to our partners in collaboration with Basin Recreation, always looking for safe crossings, always looking for some of those black holes and make some improvements in those areas. But I do think that there's a lot of opportunity in Eastern Summit County.
All right, so are we talking about moving the bike share into Eastern Summit County? Is that the hope?
You know, not quite yet. Again, I think we lack infrastructure in Eastern Summit County, and I think we're putting the cart before the horse in doing that. So again, we were able to get on the ground with a lot of the small cities and towns. Great exercise. We called them walkable audits. So we met with local officials, community stakeholders, and really just took a look at what their communities look like today, what they want to be, some improvements that they would like to make. So great exercise. We met with Hennifer, Colville City, Wanship, Oakley, Camas, and Francis. So great exercise.
Yeah. I guess so. What are the core goals of the active transportation plan?
Well, we're always looking for safe connectivity, regional connections. You know, obviously, you know, Eastern Summit County is a bit removed from Western Summit County. We have a crown jewel in the rail trail that I think we'd like to see further developed, depending on, you know, what conversations look like with state parks, but they're tracking in a good direction. We're also looking at some of those regional connections in the Camas Valley. We have the SR32 trail coming online as we speak. A canal trail concept is also floating out there. We've looked at connections from Oakley over to Wanship, and then of course from Wanship to Colville, Colville to Hennifer. So again, a lot of opportunity, and it's just, I think, providing a vision on a paper that we can then start implementing some of these ideas and priorities.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess the number one idea is just to get people out of the cars and
definitely
getting themselves around through biking, walking,
bike pads, safe crossings. You know, safe crossings are a big deal in all communities, whether it's a crosswalk, whether it's a rail trail crossing. Again, it's just something we need to be a bit more mindful of, knowing that we've got a lot more people that are wanting to get outside.
So how does the plan, how will it be used to guide future projects? I mean, to actually translate into actual projects on the ground, are you going to come up with some kind of prioritized project list? Or?
Yeah, very much so. And again, we're building from the current plan. A lot of those projects have been completed. Along with the walkable audits, we were able to meet with a lot of stakeholders. We met with the Wasatch Trails Foundation, we met with the South Summit Trails Foundation, we met Mountain Trails, we met with State Park City Cycling Group. We met with a lot of inter-department county planners and officials. We have Jess Kirby, who's over lands and open space, so she always brings a lot of good ideas. Brandon Brady is sitting on our steering committee. He's the county engineer, so as it relates to a lot of infrastructure projects around the county, where can we incorporate bike-ped facilities and again, provide some of those opportunities and complete some of the projects that we've identified as part of that plan. So we are going back, taking a lot of the information that we collected. I'm going to put the pen to paper. We have a great steering committee that we've assembled, and the idea is to come up with a plan and some recommendations and take those back to council late March, early April.
Okay, and then what role, I guess, does the plan play in applying for grants at the state or federal level?
So again, when you have a line on a map or you have a plan that highlights some of these priorities in the community, I think that provides, you know, a lot more opportunity for us. We can leverage a lot of our transportation sales dollars for projects. But UTN is a Utah Trails Network, and that's a new program that UDOT is facilitating, and those are for more of the regional connections. And again, Eastern Summit County, we don't have many lines on a map, so we need to get those lines and we need to prioritize some of those connections. So again, there's a lot of opportunity. Again, we all know that there's a lot of interest in lifestyle and connectivity here in the greater Park City area. So our last bit of information that we're collecting is the survey that you mentioned. And if users go to summitcounty.info/active transportation, you'll find the plan, just some general information, and if you scroll down through that information, you'll find the link to the survey. So the survey will be open through October 31st.
Okay, tell me what you're looking for. I mean, what is the survey asking folks?
So the survey is fairly open-ended. I mean, we had to cover both sides of the county, which both have different needs. So there's a lot of open-ended questions there. So people, if you live in Hennepin and you have a specific facility that you would like to see developed or come to fruition or improved, then you can you know, pencil that in. Again, we're just looking for information. It's fairly broad-based. There's some questions there specific to the rail trail and what folks would like to see as it relates to the rail trail and some of the improvements.
Okay, and so once you gather that information, it'll go into the plan, then the plan gets adopted by the council?
Gets adopted, and I think the idea is to update this plan every 5 to 7 years so we keep it fresh. And so we don't want to create something that's going to sit on a shelf for a long time, but we want to keep this, you know, active and fresh and keep updating as our needs change.
Okay. Eva, the county is also exploring a vanpool kind of shuttle for county employees. Tell us a little bit about the project and what you're hoping to do here.
Yeah, it's actually a partnership with Park City Municipal and Utah Transit Authority, UTA. So it's not just limited to county employees. We are really looking to launch a pilot program that would be a countywide effort. And we have a number of area employers, particularly the ski resorts, that already work with UTA to send vanpools up from Salt Lake County. So in partnering with UTA and Park City, we are looking to expand the vanpool options for area employers and employees to get to work so that there's, you know, multiple different options to, you know, recruit and retain workers in the area and expand beyond just vanpools coming up from Salt Lake. So the way that the pilot program would work is both Summit County and Park City will be subsidizing parts of the cost of the vanpools for employees. And so that way we can target people commuting from, let's say, Wasatch County, maybe even Weber County, Salt Lake County, of course. There's already vanpools coming up from there. So we're working with area employers. We had an initial outreach program or outreach meeting last month, and looking to just identify what the demand is right now and work with employers and with UTA to come up with a program.
Right. So would it be limited then just to city and county employees, or would you open it up to, others?
It's open to others. So obviously on a somewhat of a first come, first come status, but we're really working with employers. So we've had conversations with ski resorts, other employers in town. We've talked with the Park City Chamber, businesses on Main Street. So we are really looking right now to gauge interest and to expand on for a two-year pilot program, see how we can support vanpool in the area.
Yeah, do you think you can get it up and running for this ski season?
That is a goal. So we have had conversations with UTA and with the ski resorts. They've already kind of indicated how many van pools that they're looking to need this season. So our goal really is to have it up and running for ski season. Right now, we are working with UTA to try to identify how many vans we'll need and kind of how that program will roll out.
All right, and talk to me how our routes and schedules and van pool stops will be determined.
Yeah, so it's not a stopped base. It's not like a transit route. So basically, the way that it works is if there's a group of employees or people who are commuting from a certain area. Let's say they're coming from Heber City. They can work. They can join a van pool and then commute together. So one person or two people would be responsible as drivers. They could keep the van at their house overnight, or we'll work with them to identify some local businesses or areas where they could park at a park and ride, for example, overnight. And then the employees would all meet at a central meeting place and then take the van to work. Could park it over at their in Park City, at ski resort, or at one of our park and rides in the area, and then at nighttime drive back at the end of the day, or whatever their work schedules are. So it really is pretty fluid in terms of just identifying people who live in an area close to each other.
All right, and is there special licensing required for the driver? Some kind of commercial licensing?
No commercial licensing. They're normal vans. They can be like a normal 7-passenger van or up to 15-passenger van. Doesn't require particular specific licensing. However, I think they have to provide driver's license. I think personal insurance, things like that. We're still working with UTA and the employers on any additional insurance that might be required as part of the van pool program, but I think UTA does just like a basic general check to make sure that they have a clean driving sheet.
Okay, and what would the cost be for the participants?
It depends on how much miles are driven on a monthly basis. We did an estimate, a lot of people use the ski resorts, for example. A lot of their employees are coming either from Salt Lake County or Wasatch County, like Heber City. That's like about 25 miles each way. So let's say they're driving 50 miles a day. So, if they're coming in 5 days a week, that would be about $700 a month in terms of van pool costs. If they're, have a hybrid schedule, could be about $400 a month. So there is a range in costs. And then we, the way that it's working in terms of the pilot program and our partnership with Park City is Park City has pledged to subsidize up to 50% of costs for van pools that either have an origin or destination within Park City municipal limits. And then Summit County would kind of subsidize all the rest. So van pools that are either starting in eastern Summit County or in unincorporated Summit County either coming or going.
Okay. If somebody's interested, how do they express interest?
Yeah, they can reach us at vanpool@summitcountyutah.gov.
Okay. That's an email address?
Yes.
Okay. And then just expressing their interest, and you'll get them on some kind of list, or you'll...
We can coordinate with them and put them in touch with the appropriate UTA folks.
Okay. Anything else people should know? Okay.
Well, we're just excited.
Okay, and they have until the end of the month to fill out that survey.
October 31st is when that closes. So, we encourage everybody to get out there.
Okay, Senta, Eva, thanks so much for your time this morning.
All right, thank you, Leslie.
You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City at 91.7 and 88.1 FM in Summit County, heard at 91.9 FM in Wasatch County.